Blog Talk Radio. And welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon. I am your host and cruise director, Jennifer Perry, also known as Madame Perry. And I am delighted to be here this evening and introduce tonight's guest. This is a lady that I met in Chicago in May when BFF Kenya and clients Sherry and Kim Meeks and I all went to Book Expo America in Chicago. Had a fabulous time. Met some pretty exciting people. And one of them is a lady who just she just approached us and just like an old friend, like we had just known her, not that she's old, but like we had known her and just hung out forever. She's a speaker, transformation coach, and the author of Finding the Gift, Daily Meditations for Mindfulness, which is ranked in fact, very quickly was ranked in Tennessee's top 10 bestsellers list and continues to do so. She considers her award-winning 12-year career in corporate sales and eating disorder recovery journey two of her greatest teachers. She's passionate about wellness and success and has been seen in these magazines, Fast Company, Cosmopolitan, Yahoo News, and is a regular contributor to Huffington Post. And she is devoted to inspiring people to find renewed passions for living, loving, working, and playing. And believe me, when you just meet her in person, you feel this. So I want to welcome Angela Howell to Madame Perry Salon. Hi, Angela.
Hi, Madame Perry. How are you?
I am doing fabulously. I hope you are as well.
I'm good. Now, do all of your guests refer to you as Madame Perry because I want to do it right?
Okay, some do and some don't. It just depends, I think, on just the mood and how it's going. I'm glad you found your way in here. I guess I didn't know if I had mentioned to you Robert Leland Taylor, one of our favorites here as an author. He first told the world that Madame Perry Salon reminded him of the inside of Jeannie's bottle.
You told me, I heard something about that. I don't know if it was you, but I think that's hilarious. I used to love that show, so I'm excited to go inside the bottle.
I figured by now, hopefully, the word was on the street, at least in the literary streets, that that's what it was like. And so I guess when you came into the beaded curtains there, I noticed that you did pretty well with the beaded curtains and found some nice cushions to sit on.
Absolutely. I've got my hair up on top of my head in a ponytail, and my eyes are bright and ready. And I'm blinking. I can blink really good.
Okay. Well, good. That's exactly what you just get. You're in with the feel of it already, and I'm so glad. And that was true. When we met you at Book Expo, it just felt like someone that we had known and hung out with forever.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear that. I felt the same way. BEA, Book Expo America, is a huge convention. And you guys were the first faces I saw when I walked in. And so you, for me, were my welcoming committee. You kind of gave me the rundown and put me at ease.
Oh, I am so glad. Well, you've probably been at Book Expo before, haven't you?
No, that was my very first visit.
Oh, okay. All right. And you think you'll be back next year?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I'm excited to get to go to New York. I've never been to New York like to stay. I've just traveled through. So I hear it'll be back there next year.
Yeah. I missed it last year. The 2 years before, it was in New York, and I went then. And the other ladies with me, Kenya, who has been my best friend for years and years. Her, and then of course my client Sherry Meeks, who was there signing her book Finding Tambry, and her sister Sherry, who's a musician. It was their, all three of them, it was their first time. So it was a pretty big, I kept saying, you cannot imagine how big it is, and you can't imagine how friendly people are. And that's such fun. So,
well, it was wonderful.
Got,
if someone, yeah, if someone's an author or wanting to be an author, it definitely is a great place to go and get a little bit more than your feet wet, for sure.
That's true. In so many ways. Well, let me ask you this. It's about I've got many things to ask you, but in your book, it's called Finding the Gift, Daily Meditations for Mindfulness. How did this book come about, and why did you write it? What was the inspiration?
Well, try to give you not a two-hour dissertation on that, because it could be a long time, but I have been through many things in my life, starting from a very young age, traumatic things and hard things that were challenging. And yet my mother instilled a belief in me that everything works for my good from a very young age. And so finding the gift for me is about finding the gift in circumstances that don't always feel like a gift. Or it could be just an ordinary circumstance that you take for granted, but if you look closer, you might find a gift. And when I started seeing metaphors in nature, not coincidentally, when I was going through a really hard time, and it started in 2003, and then it kind of stopped and started again and never stopped in 2005. And there were metaphors attached to these gifts. So, like, I mean, I could be looking at the sky, or I could be going through a car wash, and I suddenly get this huge metaphor for life that would encourage me. So I started writing these down in handwritten journals just for me. I never intended to write a book, but they kept happening. And for 8 years, they kept happening. And I decided, I love daily readers, and I decided to put it in a book for me because they were handwritten in all these journals. And I just decided to share. So that's really how it came about.
I like the part where you say that it's you know, things happen and that you find the gift in situations that don't seem to be a gift, because that's something that some of my friends and I talk about a lot. And even, you know, Sherry and I have had situations recently, my client, that we find this happens to us. I don't know if it's just begun to happen to us, or we've just begun to become aware of it, that it's happening.
Well, it feels so much better to look for a gift than to sit in a problem, to sit in hopelessness.
Because you had, I mean, you seem to have a lot of, you had some work injuries, led to disability.
Yes,
and corporate sales.
I was in corporate sales for, 12 years, and just started having really mysterious neck pain and shoulder pain. And the doctors, I went to all kinds of doctors. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with me and just labeled it a pain syndrome and took me off work. I got better, put me back, and got worse. And, you know, it clearly became associated with work, but they couldn't find anything. So I worked until I couldn't lift my arms anymore and was finally taken off work. 3 years later and many doctors later, they found out, you know, what was wrong. But it was a hard journey of, you know, these are doctors, they're supposed to know what's going on, and they didn't.
And then, of course, pit bull attack, no small thing. I mean, I know because I was attacked by a rock once when I was walking my other dog, so I know it happened so fast.
It does, and it was, you know, really a difficult thing to go through. To add insult to injury, it was only 4 months after I had had 3 back-to-back extensive surgeries and 5 to 6 months of rehab each. And I was supposed to do one more surgery, and I just said, I cannot do any more. I just can't. Can we hold off on this one for a little while? And the doctor released me in May, and in July I was attacked by a pit bull. He chewed through a nerve in my wrist, and I had to have an extensive surgery and 5 more months of rehab. So it was just heartbreaking on top of all the trauma. But to have to do that after I'd already been through so much, it was difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It really was.
So, and yeah, no, that's one of those things where, like, I know when it happened to us, because we were walking dogs, everybody says, well, why didn't you do this and that? Like, you know, it happened so fast. You know,
right.
You don't have time to sit back and, well, let me analyze this. You know, what move should I make? It's just there, and it hurts. Now, how is that? Is the nerve in your wrist, is that better? Is it?
It's mostly better. I mean, you know, there's definitely impairment from both issues that I deal with. And again, I find the gift in that because I could be so much more unable to do certain things. In fact, most people who don't know me, who know me, have no idea that I'm limited. It rarely comes out. I do what I can do, and you know, most people just wouldn't know. So I'm grateful. It could have affected my legs, my ability to walk. I mean, it could have done so much more. So I'm so grateful that it only did what it did. And you know, it was a hard time, but a lot of fruit came out of that, because not coincidentally, when all of that was going on, when before the dog attack, but when the work thing happened, that was the year that I started really getting the metaphors. So while that known life was ending, that comfortable, familiar life was ending, I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, I was becoming an author, and I also accidentally became a photographer that year. And a whole creative life came out of all of that devastation.
You know, I get the feeling that you were being transitioned.
Yes,
you know, like
I believe
my
so.
Our guardian angels are kind of pushing us from one thing to another when things happen. We say, maybe they're just trying to get us away from this and over here to something. And one thing you're making, one thing this reminds me of is, you know, learning about you and this path is last night I was watching a documentary on public television about Margaret Mitchell. And about all the things, you know, she did. You know, she was a little bit different from the usual Southern women of her time, a little bit more, I guess, more insouciant in her attitudes toward the rules and restrictions for Southern women. But she kept having she was a flapper. She did this French version of the tango that got her, honestly, disbarred, kicked out of the junior league of Atlanta. But she kept having these accidents, like horse riding accidents that hurt her ankles or her legs or her feet a couple of times. And so then she had to get orthopedic shoes, or she was like, oh my God, you know, this is a woman. She was a flapper, and now she's in these orthopedic shoes because of all her accidents. And of course, then, you know, when she was sort of on her back and she had some other injuries, that she was in a position where she couldn't do much else and began writing. And then, you know, she'd always written short stories and stuff, but then that's when she went into Gone with the Wind, wrote that. So,
wow. And,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't feel good at the time. If we knew where we were going, then we might be encouraged, you know. But I had to be honest and say that I was, on the outside, everything looked good before all the injuries. You know, I had a great job, a good marriage, made, you know, plenty of money and all of that, but I wasn't happy. So I had known for a period of time that I was probably supposed to do something else, but I was not about to leave my comfortable nest. And I think that sometimes we get a little help, you know. Little baby birds get pushed from the nest when they don't think they're ready. And sometimes I think we get an extra little shove in a direction that ultimately is going to be for our best good, but it just may not feel like it, or it may feel too scary to take the leap unless we actually do get, you know, extra motivation to go for it.
And you have, so then explain how that flows into, in the intro of your book, when you say you claim that you're ordinary, and what do you mean by your motto, ordinary life, extraordinary perspective?
Well, kind of like I referred to earlier, sometimes finding the gift is looking for the blessing in really hard circumstances. But we're not all going through hard circumstances. Some of us are just, you know, it's just kind of okay. And we're having kind of ordinary lives. And it's not bad, but maybe a spark is missing. And I've noticed that if I take the time to look, I can make an extraordinary moment inside an ordinary day, you know, by just looking around at my circumstances and maybe looking for small things like a close parking place, you know, and instead of just pulling in there, whipping in there and going on about my business, but stopping to notice and say, hey, that's cool. You know, look, I'm right up front. Or you know, the pay it forward thing. Someone may go before you in a drive-thru and pay your cab, or it could just be taking a walk and noticing how amazing a flower is that we might have just passed right on by before, or noticing a sunset. It's there's a lot of really extraordinary things around us on ordinary days that get unnoticed.
Yeah, and that's true. It's just so many little blessings, little miracles, little notes. You know, I just feel like something's like this little note for maybe just life, God, my guardian angel. It could be my grandmother saying, look over this begonia or something. You know, just knowing that at that moment, give you a delight, and maybe that's I don't know anything about you know, I'm no neuroscientist, although I do read those brain magazines, and I can look at the pictures and follow those pretty well, if there's enough of them, and they're pretty well done, but I think sometimes, you know, I feel like that will sort of trigger a pleasure center and open up a part of your mind to see things or understand things that you might not have seen before. Never know.
Right.
So do
right.
I need
to be? I was going to say, when we can conjure up joy, or when we can bring up a feeling of gratitude, we do shift everything. We shift ourselves and we shift the people that we come in contact with. And it really is a choice of just noticing that first thing to feel happy about or to appreciate.
True. Yeah. Shifting your mindset and can change so much. Now, somebody else was asking me earlier. They when we were talking about you, and they said, "Well, you know, I'm reading Angela's website. Do I have to be a mindfulness expert, quote unquote, to benefit from the book?"
Well, absolutely not. And I love that question because so many people, well, a lot of people don't even know what mindfulness is, and it's confused with meditation, which is also largely misunderstood. So absolutely not. Like, mindfulness is what we just got through talking about. It's taking the time to be where you are when you're there for as long as you're there. It's taking the time to be present. And anyone that wants to develop a mindfulness practice, you can start by doing it once a day. So one incident, or maybe taking a 3-minute mindfulness meditation to just stop what you're doing and observe. Observe what's going on inside you, in your body, around you. That's it. It's easy, you know. And meditation, people feel like, okay, I got to sit cross-legged on the floor, put my fingers together and chant Om. You know, that's just a stereotypical form of meditation, but there's so many others. You can be, you know, do a walking meditation. You can do a writing meditation. I had a lady tell me one time, I just can't meditate. I don't know why it is. I try and try, but I just can't do it. But she said, I go outside and I can sit out by the pool and I can just get lost in a meditative state. And I'm like, well, you're meditating. You don't have to do it a certain way before it's official.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up because so many of us don't realize it. You know, we just don't. We make it harder than it is.
Right. And, you know, I love meditation. Is hard for a lot of people, and myself included. It's hard to be still and be quiet, especially, you know, where we've got these phones attached and beeping and chirping and doing all the notifications that they do. But I challenge people to start easy. Start, you know, take that phone, silence everything else, and put it on a 3-minute timer and see if you can go just 3 minutes tuning all the other thoughts that take you somewhere else and just be where you are for 3 minutes. And then you can build from there.
when did you start to notice like everyday lessons and getting an example of, and could you give an example of where you find metaphors? And I've been looking at your website and the stories about the little baby birds.
Yeah.
And what we can, the six lessons baby birds.
Oh, that was funny. You know, it's the season for baby birds, and we had a family of finches, is what we think they were, for, gosh, we studied them for probably 5 weeks. And, I got so many lessons about the baby birds from, you know, the, number one, diversity. They didn't all get on the thing and leave together. They were wired differently. Two of them were early birds. They wanted to get out the first, but, you know, be first. And then you had the next that kind of, you know, and the first two just took right off. They knew what they were doing. Well, the next one came up to the edge, wasn't so sure, and then kind of didn't do the greatest job, you know, flitted a little bit and went straight to the ground. But after a hopping around a little bit, it tried again, and it was able to get up into the tree. And then there was one left, and I remember the mother and the family, everybody's chirping, basically probably saying, what are you waiting for? Come on. Well, that bird was probably thought, well, why would I want to leave this nest? It's perfect. Won't y'all come back? You know, I make up what everybody's thinking. But that's us. That's us saying, but why? Why do I want to go do that? I'm happy here. But then I imagine when that bird finally left and flew around, he was like, oh, I get it now. Yeah, this is much better. Thank you for encouraging me to do it. You know, so anyway, uh-huh. That's just an example of kind of how I get the metaphors. It started with a set of trees, and like I said, it can be nature, and it's a lot of times nature, but it can be, I joke that I see things, I can stare at a wall and get some crazy metaphor, or, you know, like drive through a car wash. I drove through a car wash one day. I've been through a car wash a million times, but that day I just noticed how violent it was. But that very violent whipping thing where you think you're going to drown before you come out the other side, you come out the other side better. You thought you were going to drown or be beaten to death, but no, you came out better and cleaner and shinier than when you went in. So the thing that you think is going to kill you is going to grow you and make you shiny.
That, you know, that's great, because I think that's one of those things that we probably don't talk about, but we all get to a point in the car wash where we're thinking, what if that thing just beat through my window? What if this? You know, what if that?
Oh, and I know. I joke. They're violent. You know, next time you go through a car wash, I hope you see how violent they are. But you know what's so amazing about the car wash? That little belt. As long as I don't take over and try to control what's not mine to control, and in the car wash metaphor, that's slamming on the brakes. I'm going to mess up a lot of things if I slam on the brakes, but if I keep it in neutral, as I've been told to do, and I follow instruction, and I let that little thing carry me through, I'm going to come out, and everything's going to be fine. So that's March 7th in my book, the car wash metaphor. And then since writing these crazy things keep happening. On another trip to the car wash, I got a whole nother metaphor about the internal process of cleaning the car, and I won't spill the beans on that one. You have to wait for the next book.
Okay, all right. You're gonna keep us. Yeah, you're gonna keep us on the string about that one. I got you. I got you. I don't believe you.
I can't give it all to you right now, Madam Perry.
Of course not. No. You can't give it all away right away. You got to keep us. You gotta keep us that intrigue there. I like it, and I love the bird metaphors too. I've been going over and over and over the pictures because, you know, I've always had some of my hanging baskets, and now my husband, he's restoring an old British MG garage, and he's got a nest of birds on one of his shelves where he keeps his parts and tools.
In the garage, huh?
What?
They're in the garage.
Yeah, on a ship. I don't know how.
Oh, my
and it's,
goodness.
It's, he's got them in there, but he makes a point at night. He leaves just enough room under the garage door. He won't shut it all the way so that the mama can get it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so she stays there while he works and stuff on this car, and it's like he told me, I didn't believe him at first, you know, that it was in the garage, but that's where they are. I guess she's comfortable while he's working, and she and the daddy are doing what they do to raise the babies. They're still eggs now, so yeah.
Yes.
So,
and see, that's
let me
something
ask.
That's so easy for people to not see, to just fly by and or not. I'm blonde, so that wasn't intended as a pun, but did you get it, fly by?
No.
We just miss these things if we don't take the time. If we're too busy, we're just so bogged down in our every day-to-day monotony that we miss things. So I'm glad that you are noticing the birds.
Yeah, it's great. Well, you know what? I'm going to stop for just a moment here. Maybe we can get a cup of tea, a glass of water. I want to play a song by my friend, by a friend of mine that's here. In fact, actually, let's see. You should stop with a little song here. And this is by my friend Hugh Cornwell, who, if you remember the 80s band The Stranglers.
What was the name of it again?
The Stranglers. It's an 80s new wave band out of England.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to play a little song by Hugh Cornwell, and then we'll be right back with more of Angela Hummel and Madame Perry. That was Hugh Cornwell, Under Her Spell. And that's from his latest CD. You might remember Cornwell from from the Stranglers, 80s new wave band. And you may or may not know, even if you were a fan of the Stranglers, folks, that Hugh is a writer. I mean, he's written books about the Stranglers, but he also he studied botany. I think he got his PhD in botany. But he also has a few little mystery books that he's written, and they're really quite good. So check out Hugh Cornwell. I think one was called Window on the World, and it's actually about a botanist who falls in love with an artist and begins trying to collect all of her art and until she finally just drives him insane over the bend. Until the pictures
love
begin
does
talking.
That, doesn't it?
Things, you know, it's kind of a little psychological. It's good though. He's very good. All right.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you too. What kind of music do you like, by the way?
Well, I love music. I'm pretty diverse. I come from a family of musicians. So, and I live in Nashville. I like country. I like Christian. I like classical. I like jazz. I do love 80s music. I mean, I'm an 80s baby, so love all that. I pretty much like most everything unless I can't find a melody.
Oh, real, I know.
if it's just, you know, I don't like to put music down. There's something for everybody, but I like most everything.
I can dig it. I can too. You said something earlier about one of the first car wash metaphors, and you said that it is the in the meditation, the daily meditations. That was for March 7th. So the daily meditations are and finding the gift are seasonal. Is that right? Am I right?
Yes, many of them are. I wrote these outside for the most part, or they were inspired, you know, somewhere out. And many of them are seasonal. And so when I put the writings together, you know, again, it was written over 8 years. I purposely kept all the Januaries together and all the Decembers together and the Junes together because I feel like life doesn't ignore the seasons. And, you know, when we're in January, it's a time of new birth that's happening underneath the ground. So we're coming out of an incubator stage, getting ready to go into spring in life as well as in nature. And so, you know, a lot of times I'll write like the baby bird. You know, that actually was a recent blog, but that probably will be used in my next round of, you know, next Finding the Gift book. And that will come out in May because that's, you know, May, June, that's the time of baby birds.
Oh, okay. All right, and that's true. Yeah, you're right. Now you put it that way. Yeah, it all makes sense to me too.
Or even like the holidays in November, where there's an extra hurriedness in the air. We can't deny it. You know, the days are getting shorter, and we're in sync with nature, whether we recognize it or acknowledge it or not, and whatever's going on seasonally, like holidays. Whether, you know, regardless of what we celebrate, we can't deny that the retail, you know, and traffic's thicker and people are shorter fused. And so there may be more things about self-care in November or certainly gratitude to honor Thanksgiving.
It's very true. I see that now. Yeah, very, very much so. Now you help people, Angela, with a coaching program that you wrote, you created. It's called A Life Worth Having. Would you tell us about that?
Sure. And that title is really meaningful to me because, like I said before, I had everything that kind of looked good on the outside. Other people might say it was a life worth having, but it didn't feel that way to me. And I believe there are too many people that are going through life with not that full feeling of peace and happiness and contentment or, you know, really fulfilling what they were put on this earth to do. I made sure that I made a lot of money. I grew up very poor and with a lot of chaos and insecurity, and my answer to that was make a lot of money. well, it didn't fix all my problems. And so, and then also you mentioned that part of my past is an eating disorder that, you know, was really pretty severe for about 10 years and resulted in several hospitalizations and put me on a recovery path early on to, you know, find a way to live where I can cope in a more healthy way with life. And so I've been on a path for a long time. I've just always been a student of personal development. I've read lots of books. I've been in therapy. I've gone to recovery things. I've been to seminars. And, you know, I am nowhere near arrived. Let me make that clear. But I have learned a few things along the way. And so I feel like what I've done with the program that I've written is take the things that stuck with me. You know how sometimes you read a book and there may be one thing that sticks with you, or you go to a seminar and there's one thing that really stands out that you actually put into practice? That's what this is. You know, it's a program with the nuggets, the best of the best of the things and the ideas that I've gathered along the years and put into place. I may have tweaked them a little bit in ways that, you know, suited me, but that's what my program is. And the very first thing it starts with is attacking our beliefs that we hold, because we are where we are based on the set of beliefs that were given to us and that we've adopted and carried along the way. If we don't like our life, we have to start with the very first thing that got us this life, and that's our belief system.
When you're well, talk to us about if somebody was wanted to hire a coach. How does somebody? I figure some people, you know, life coaches, people are more familiar with a life coach now. But if someone wanted to, say, hire you for your coaching, what would be one of the first things that you're going to ask them, or what would they need to do to get into the process or to begin the process of being coached by you?
Well, I think the very first thing, you know, I always joke that finding a coach is a lot like dating. You know, not everybody meshes, and so you need to definitely have, I recommend having, you know, a short conversation just to see how the personalities go back and forth. And for a long time, I put people in my life that would tell me what I want to hear. Now, do you think that's very productive? You know, not giving someone permission to challenge me? Because I'm still kind of driving the bus, and it was brought to my attention as recently as just a year and a half ago. Who do you have in your life that has permission to kind of get up in your face and say, I think you should think harder about that. I think you should relook at that. I'm like, well, why would I want someone like that in my life? But we need people like that in our life. Otherwise, if everybody just kind of agrees with us, well, we're still kind of on our own doing our own thing. And my best thinking doesn't always get me where I really want to be. So I have a coach now that has permission to get up in my face and challenge me when I'm pretty stubborn about not doing things differently. Because if we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to keep getting what we're getting. So we need someone who has the courage and the permission to challenge us. And so the first thing is to have a little call with that person. And I think it's important for both parties. The client needs to make sure that they're comfortable and they're going to get someone who's really going to help them and be able to show tangible results. But the coach needs to be able to determine if this person's serious. There's too many people that want to work with a good coach for me to waste my time with someone who isn't serious, because money is not just the only way that I am compensated for my time. It's rewarding to me to really help somebody. You know, there's just too many clients out there to waste time with someone who's not serious and not really wanting to make a change. So I think it's
understand.
A good dating thing on both parts.
Or as a book publicist like I am, you know, if somebody's really, really into working with their book and listening to me and trust me that I've got their best interest at heart for them and their books, that's the reward for me more than the money. It's the I don't know, I feel like that's why I say I'm the anti-mame of book publicity. I just feel like I've opened the doors for somebody, let them see where they could be. So I see. So I do understand that. On your website, there's a part where, and if you don't mind, I'm going to read this. It says, say yes to your soul. It's okay to be brilliant. And when you're talking about it, you said, You said, why do you suppose the greatest athletes in the world use a coach? And not just any coach, but one with specific experience in the areas where greater excellence is desired. And then you continue, a coach can't give someone what they don't inherently possess, so it's about trusting and bring out the greatness already inside them. And when I read that you wrote, Angela, that it made me think about, I'm following the young gymnast, the Olympics, and it talks about their coaches, this coach and that coach has been with somebody, and you see what a big effect it has. And that's what you're doing.
Yes, and one of the sayings in 12-step, I recover from my eating disorder and codependency. I am continuing recovery in 12-step arena, and one of the things they say is find someone who has what you want and mirror them. You know, find out how they did. What did they do to get that? And so, you know, you wouldn't want to hire someone who's a pro skier if what you're trying to do is race cars. That's not their field of expertise. And so, there's a lot of coaches out there. You need to find someone who has what you want, you know, whether it's the career you want or the contentment you want. And they don't have to be like the master. They just need to be further along than you, because we could stay stuck forever looking for the master and then never hire a coach.
Uh-huh. But just like you, just farther, you know, that's what you want, but just a little farther along than you, to kind of bring you along the path.
Right, right. So, someone who you can look at their life and see that they have, you know, gotten some of the things, again, whether it's a career or whether it's relationship or whether it's just the state of mind, the way that they live, do they have something to teach you or not? And, you know, you start with the conversation, and then, you know, usually most coaches will do it, you know, 3 to 6 sessions, and you're going to have a really good sense, certainly after 6 sessions, if that coach is working for you.
I like that it's called, you said you're the founder of a heart-seeking series in Life Worth Having.
Absolutely, because... Well, I did it the other way. I sought the paycheck, and that didn't give me everything I wanted. So, start with the heart and see where that takes you.
Angela, you've been building an online community on your blog. Could you explain that to me a little bit more?
Sure, and I actually just launched a new website. I'm so excited about it, AngelaHowell.com, and I've moved my blog over from, I had FindingTheGift.com, which is, you know, the name of the book and kind of the essence of a lot of what I talk about. But my sense is we are all in this together, and I say that a lot. I am looking for people who are on the same journey, whether they're ahead of me, kind of lateral with me, or maybe they're not quite yet where I have, you know, gotten to be. It doesn't really matter. We're all in this together, and we can learn from each other, whether we've been doing this for 5 years, 2 months, or 30 years. That's another really great way to approach life, is that I can learn from every single person I encounter. And so the community that I've created, you know, the goal is for people to comment on blogs and, you know, share what they know, bring their gifts, you know, to share with others. So I'm really hoping to attract more like-minded people who are wanting to find the gift in their life.
Well, I love the sound of this. I was going to say I like it, but then I stopped and went, no, I love this. I really do. So you're creating a community. And that's what I was talking to one today, that, you know, social media, you know, through social media, internet, whatever, it might sound, you know, kind of distant, and yet I have met so many enchanting people that have just endeared themselves to me and been helpful through this. And here you are taking advantage of the opportunity of a blog and being online to bring together a community. And I just think that's marvelous. I really
well,
do.
Well, thank you. And I want to say, please, if you are resonating with what we're talking about and you have an experience to share, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and I've, you know, got the hashtag Finding the Gift. So if you share something where you found the gift in an you know, adverse situation or maybe in an ordinary day, put that hashtag on there, because I look at that all the time, and I want to see this grow. I want to see more people approaching life and finding the gift.
Okay, I like that. And so for everyone too, as you already know, if you've ever listened before, that on the Madame Perry Salon page on Facebook as well as Twitter, and I've also started a Madame Perry Salon page on Pinterest, I always add the information for my guests for all kinds of contact and their Twitter, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, whatever. I make sure that you know how to find them. And everyone, I think some people have like their favorite social media, like some people are Twitter, some people are Instagram, but I make sure that you have everything you want to find Angela Howell and every other guest I have that interests you. So we look for hashtag Find the Gift. And, you know, Angela, it's been such a pleasure to have you here, and I certainly hope you'll come back. You've been very generous with your time tonight, but I hope you'll come back sometime. And there's a little something else you have. Don't you have, I think you get a free gift waiting for people.
Well, I am the gift lady, you know. So, yes, I do have a free gift. If people want to go to AngelaHowell.com, there's a little pop-up that'll flash, or there's a couple of other ways that you can grab it. If you like what we've talked about tonight, I have an e-book. It's called 10 Secrets to Finding the Gift. It's not anything that you're going to find in my book, although I would love for you to experience my book too, and there's ways to get my book on the website. But the e-book is free, and all you have to do is, you know, sign up for it, and it'll also give you updates anytime I put a new blog out or anything else that's of importance. I'm pretty selective about how often I send people things. I don't want to bombard them. And if at any time, you know, it's too much, they can always unsubscribe. But grab the free gift while you're there for sure at AngelaHowell.com.
All right, AngelaHowell.com, and ebook is 10 Secrets to Finding the Gift. Were you going to give away any secrets right now, or just have us go on there and find them, like our own little treasure hunt?
I tell you what, I'll give you one.
Okay.
Be your own best friend. We can't show up in relationships completely able to give to another person when we are lacking in what we've given to ourselves. And this is a lesson that I have to keep on practicing, because I tend to stay busy and then I show up at the end of the day for my family empty. And that isn't good for anybody. So be your own best friend, and all of your relationships will benefit.
I love that one. I really do.
That's
so very
cuff. That's off the cuff. I don't know what it actually says in the book, but it's something like that.
I can dig it. I think that's right on with it. It's so great to have you here. And I just want to tell everybody, I will have the information on all my media about this. Angela Howell, she's an author, speaker. She's a life coach, a photographer. And she's on, you can find her on AngelaHowell.com. She's also on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Goodreads. She will help you find a gift, and just contact her, get the ebook, and then you're going to want to go and get her other book that you can buy. And you know what, like I said, when I met this lady, she just radiated a friendliness and a sincerity and a down-to-earth honesty that was very very wonderful and very refreshing and very welcoming. Angela Howell, who actually, if you think she sounds too good to be true, she's not. She's what you think she is. She's what I think she is. She's brilliant, but she's heart-centered. She wants you to find the very best in your life and her life. This is a lady who made a bird's nest for a little mockingbird that fell on the ground. His first time trying to fly, and she helped it up. She actually made a nest, put his nest in it, put it up on the tree, nailed it in place, put the bird back up there. Am I getting the story right, Angela?
You got it right. And that bird just needed, like, he needed one more try from high up.
And she gave it, and she's been known to give these last little birds out of the nest to give them a little pep talk along with the family.
That's true.
And,
yes.
And I
think you are
that's
so kind.
What we were all to do. I think that's wonderful. And I think my audience, if I know them pretty well, and I think I do, they, you know, we all love that. We all love to know that you went out of your way to make all that happen for this little bird. You know, mother to mother, I'm sure that bird's mother was watching you too, thinking, yeah, she's a mom. She gets it. She knows.
Oh, the mom was singing to the baby, and the baby was singing back. So I was just there to facilitate. It was my pleasure.
All right. And I'm going to leave on that wonderful story and say thank you again, Angela Howell. Folks, you'll find all the information for her. I'm so glad you listened to Madame Perry Salon. And please follow us here on Blog Talk Radio, or you can subscribe on iTunes for no money whatsoever. And I'm going to take us out. Speaking of, well, this isn't about flying, but it's about swinging. I'm going to take us out with a song from my CD called Everybody's Got to Swing. Thank you so much, Angela Howell.
Thank you.
Goodbye, Luda. Clean Billy up, though. Bug scene.